You got a little more music this time than last in other weeks.
Yes.
This is Linoleum Knife.
Why don't you explain to them what that music was? And turn off the thing.
Oh, yeah. All right. This is a somewhat lengthy explanation for what I just played. But it ties into the movie we're going to talk about first.
Okay.
And where I'll get, you'll know as we discuss.
Okay. I have now, no idea what we're talking about.
That was the Reynolds Girls.
Right.
Perhaps you've never heard of them.
Unless you're British.
Unless you're British.
And we're alive in the 80s.
And we're alive in the 80s. That is a song from 1989. It's called I'd Rather Jack.
Produced by?
Stock, Aitken, and Waterman, who gave us Rick Astley and Kylie Minogue.
The Sounds of a Bright Young
Britain. Sounds of a Bright Young Britain. Yeah. Jack is slang. And it means to dance to house music, which was a big, brand new, fresh, exciting thing.
In 1989. I'm going to write that down.
It had actually, if we're going to be real technical about it, it had been around for several years and had been popular and was already incredibly popular in England in 1989.
Right.
And I will get to why I chose the Reynolds Girls in just a moment. I want to tell you where this song comes from on this cassette that I have in my hand. This cassette just says on the outside, London, 1989. I was
in 1989.
This tape is 22 years old. And I made this tape in London while I was there going to school for this whole semester, January to June of 1989.
Mm-hmm.
And here's who else is on this cassette. Kirsty MacColl.
Oh.
Transvision Vamp. The Luna Chicks.
Right.
Tone Loke.
Of course.
The Wedding Present.
Mm-hmm.
A house music
thing called
Humanoid is the name of the artist. More Wedding Present. More Humanoid. More Wedding Present. Farley Jackmaster Funk performing with Daryl Pandy, Love Can't Turn Around. Now, you need to go to YouTube and you need to type Love Can't Turn Around and the words Top of the Pops into YouTube and watch the late Daryl Pandy have a conniption fit while singing this song on Top of the Pops. You just need to do that.
Okay.
Because you'll have a really nice time watching him do that. What else is on this tape is Mudhoney.
Mm-hmm.
And a Japanese hardcore punk band called SOB. Now, and some other folks. As are the Reynolds Girls and their one hit.
I'd Rather Jack.
They were sisters.
Which was a protest song. From Liverpool
or something. And that, the point of the song is not important.
Okay.
The point of me adding this to our soundtrack of Linoleum Knife.
It's not to complain about how the BBC only plays.
No, rock acts. You're barking up the whole wrong tree.
Then why are you
I'm
playing Reynolds?
I'm
going to
tell
Girls?
You if you'll stop interrupting me.
I'm being Dave White.
I know. So what happens is we watch this movie called One Day. And it just made me remember this British slang that I learned while I was there. If something was dorky or embarrassing or tacky or stupid, people would say it was naff.
That's a good word.
N-A-F-F.
I like that word.
And that was a word that got thrown around a lot about the Reynolds girls, who were teenagers at the time, and who had their one big house record hit, which apparently a poll that was taken like just recently,
a few years ago,
of like worst British pop hits of all time, mm-hmm. they came in like I think like the top 10.
Yeah, how did they like, if they beat Crazy Frog, that poll is garbage.
And so, I have been somewhat obsessed with this song since 1989, and its utter weirdness. But mostly I chose it because it is, as my friends back in 1989 in London called it, naff. And that is what One Day is. And One Day begins in 1988, mere months, probably on the day that the Reynolds girls were recording this song. And it's appropriate.
And if only the movie had been about them.
And if only the movie had been about the Reynolds girls and their fall from fame. I could recommend the movie One Day to you wholeheartedly.
Alas, however, it is not about
at this
that.
Moment, I can only recommend One Day to you if you are an idiot and drunk. And even then, it won't be fun.
No, there are better things to do as a drunk idiot than
gonna
to go see
I'm going
to
let you start
day.
Telling people what happens in this movie, uh-huh. because I have work to be doing. Okay. I'm multitasking today.
Yeah.
I'm making carnitas tacos for dinner.
Dave, who legendarily cannot do two things at a time, is going to try and podcast and cut up a pork butt.
I got a pork shoulder, a pork butt here, 4-pound pork butt that I have to dice into little 1-inch cubes.
Yes.
And, or actually about 1/2-inch cubes. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do that. That'll be the noise you're hearing if you hear any noises at all. Yes. So but it's going to take me a while, and I really want to get to work on dinner after we're finished podcasting, so I'm doing it now.
If you're a vegan, sorry, you will be hearing flesh
this
being rendered.
This podcast is not in aromascope, so it doesn't matter.
True, and we'll talk about that later, too. No, we're going to start with...
Explain the crappy
So we're
going to
start with One Day, then. All right, well, One Day is based on a book that was apparently rather successful among the ladies' book club set.
The person who read the book and told me about it is a dude.
Really?
Who will go unnamed in this podcast because he cried while he watched this movie. And I'm not going to say his name.
Is this dude a total gay wad?
No, he and I are part of a brotherhood.
I see.
And we are not going to discuss embarrassing things about each other.
I see. So he's got dirt on you, too, then. By the way,
he doesn't have any dirt on
you. You are Dave White, film critic for movies.com.
Oh, yeah. You're Alonzo Duralde. You are the film critic of therap.com.
And
this pork butt is going to be turned into carnitas that are going to be so amazing.
And the sawing is coming up on the microphone, just so you
is
know.
Is it? That's all
it
right.
It is. Anyway, so One Day is about this couple of twits who meet on the day they graduate from college.
Who plays those twits, Alonzo?
Anne Hathaway and Jim Sturgess.
God, she's so ugly.
TiVo was getting us The Devil Wears Prada today, and we were realizing there's like a whole series of movies in which they have to like go out of the way to frump up
so
Anne Hathaway.
Ugly. She's so ugly. It's easy to turn her ugly because she's so ugly.
Trying desperately to make her plain so that she can then blossom and suddenly start looking like Anne Hathaway.
If you were to mistakenly believe, for example, that Anne Hathaway is, I don't know, luminously beautiful because of her porcelain skin, beautiful eyes, and lovely curly hair, and pretty, pretty, pretty demeanor at all times. You would be wrong. She's gross.
So this movie, again, starts out with... those are small cubes. She was...
It was going to be little carnitas.
Lucinda was...
Lucinda Scala Quinn was cutting them too big.
All right.
She always tells you one thing and then does another.
Okay.
I've noticed this. I watched her last week go, just put a tablespoon of olive oil in the skillet. She dumps like a half a cup
but
of olive oil.
But I don't know what she said, but I watched her make cubes, and her cubes were bigger.
Don't watch.
Okay, yeah. Fine. This is your deal.
I know what I'm doing.
Anyway, so Anne Hathaway and Jim Sturgess meet on the night they graduate from college, and then they wind up not hooking up, partially because she's so ugly, and partially because she puts Talking About a Revolution on the turntable as makeout music, which is not a good idea.
That's the funniest part of the whole movie.
Yes, and it happens in the first 5 minutes.
That is the funny thing in the movie.
And so, instead they become like lifelong friends who sort of nurse this crush on each other and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, as the movie progresses, you keep checking in with them on the same day, July 15th, year after year after year after year after year, and watch their, like, hairstyles and attitudes change over the course of several decades. But because it's like I was telling Dave, it's like watching the first 5 minutes of a movie over and over again. Like, yeah. You never really get to know who these people are or what drives them or what they're about. It's just this sort of like quick touching base and, you know, oh, look, here's some pop songs from that year. And, you know, look at the hairstyles change or whatever. But it's never about people.
People pulled their jeans up real high in the early 90s.
Exactly. Oh, look at that. Look at that denim vest. And, oh, that, remember that Delamitri song? You know, and that's it. And that's all you've got for this entire running length time of this movie. And it's just so shallow and stupid and unengaging. I
wanted them both to die by the end of the movie.
Basically, it was,
and I got half my wish.
And yeah, it's one of those movies that, like, again, that milks the death of a major character. We won't say who, as a cheap way to get tears. But since you don't know who that person was in the first place, who cares? Now, a word about Jim Sturgess.
There's a curse on him. I don't blame him.
Is he not a good actor, or does he just always get stuck with the worst
scripts? He was in that The Way Back, or The Long Way Back?
The Way Home.
The Way Home, yeah.
Which I didn't see.
Not a terrible movie,
but
he was good in it.
Everything I've seen, I mean, he was in Across the Universe.
Almost everything else he's in.
He was in that terrible, the Harrison Ford and the Immigrants movie that our friend Chill was in.
I keep forgetting
what that movie was called.
I think it was called, like, Justice with an exclamation.
No, Crossing Over. Yeah. That's what it is. Crossing Over. But yeah, he's just in all these just naff films. And he seems nice enough. Like, he seems like a sort of engaging enough kind of cute leading man guy. But his movies are also terrible. It's hard to...
All he has to do is stick around long enough and eventually he'll be in a decent movie.
I guess so. Or, you know, he'll play detective on the BBC. I don't know.
Right.
But yeah, so anyway, One Day is...
He's in Crap Movie.
One Day is a crap movie. Another crap movie for Jim Sturgess. It's awful. And it was one of those movies where, like...
Detached Leonard Baldwin's retina.
Yeah, single-handedly. All the critics that were at the screening, we all just sort of left and, like, kind of looked at each other in the parking garage like, holy crap, what was that? Yes, and poor Leonard Maltin had his not long thereafter went to El Paso for the classic film festival there and had a detached retina and had to have surgery, and then he couldn't fly, so he...
It's this movie's fault.
Yes, and then so he and his wife and his daughter had to drive back from Texas, and but we wish him a speedy recovery. But yeah, it's all One Day's fault. that cornea was running for it. So yeah, PU.
There's just nothing, I mean... There's absolutely nothing going on in this movie.
No.
Not from a plot perspective. It doesn't look good. It looks crappy. It's just shot in a bunch of different rooms, you know.
Yeah. I mean, well, there's a little bit of on the beach, but not
whatever.
Much.
It looks bad. It reads bad. It sounds bad. It plays bad. Everything about this movie is completely wrong. If you love this book, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's a great book. Who knows?
Yeah,
I was told that it's a lovely book,
and I'm
with
sure
lots of interior monologues.
Exactly. Sure, the book allows for you know, ways that for the characters to express themselves in a way that we get to know them, you know, in the way that they know each other. But the movie never lets us into that. And so it's directed by the woman that directed An Education a couple of years ago.
When the big horrible thing happens at the end, I did not laugh out loud, but I had to stifle my out loud laugh.
Yeah, well, they telegraph it so blatantly. It's just like...
The opening shot.
Yeah. It's so like, here it comes. Are you ready? You know, anyway, so...
Oh, wait, I'm sorry, I interrupted you. An Education.
Oh, yeah, it's directed by the woman that did An Education. And when we got out of the movie, Dave said, well, I guess we know who's responsible for that movie, you know. And I guess, yeah, the Nick Hornby script made all the difference because, man. And this script was written by the guy that wrote the book, but...
I bet they took it away from him.
Well, he's credited in any event.
Right. That's an it got taken away from me.
Not necessarily. I think sometimes novelists don't know how to translate their work to, you know, it because writing for film and writing a novel are fundamentally different activities.
I know it.
Exactly. And so some people don't know how to adapt their own stuff to the screen, you know, in a way that makes it communicate in the way that it did on the printed page. Anyway, so what else opened this week? You brought up Aromascope, so I guess we can talk about
Spy Kids.
Spy Kids 4D.
My Aromascope card didn't work.
All the time in the world. Neither did mine. All of mine smelled like Trix cereal and cardboard.
Mine, I did not smell Trix or cardboard. I just smelled weird, like,
Fakey chemical?
Chemicals, yeah. Like it had been soaked in some sort of dry cleaning fluid or something. Ugh. It smelled just like toxic off gases of weird chemicals. And I tried. I scratched it with what exists of my fingernails. I cut my fingernails so short that I don't actually like have them. But I did, you know, I scratched it. Yeah. I rubbed it. Like I had read somewhere, oh, you're just supposed to simply rub it with your thumb like an iPhone or whatever.
Yeah, no. I tried that. Everything.
I scraped it with my car keys.
Okay, I didn't go that far.
I gouged that thing into pieces I tore it up trying to maybe there were little smells encapsulated in the bottom somewhere inside the fibers of this you know, cardstock. Nothing.
So
I got nothing.
So that's a big ripoff. And you know, did you see polyester in its original theatrical run in the early 80s?
No, I was too young. No, I wasn't even in a where was I living in the early 80s?
You're right. Okay, fair enough.
That did John Waters movies did not come
to
Roswell and or New Mexico.
I was in Atlanta, and for some reason my good friend's parents wanted to go see this movie, so we went. It's one of
seriously?
My yeah. So it's one of my early R-rated film
what
experiences.
What did his parents think of it when it was done?
They thought it was funny.
I'm going to have an abortion.
And I can't wait. So anyway, I saw Odorama in the theater in its original run. And Odorama worked. Those scratch and sniff things all worked. And this one, big letdown. And I mean, to the extent that it almost feels like false advertising.
I feel
like
bad
they didn't
for
even try.
Well, you know what?
And I mean, kids are going to be really
and
annoyed.
And we saw it at two different theaters, too, because there was no press screening.
Right. I saw it at the Sherman Oaks Arclight.
And I saw it at the Chinese Six.
Yeah. And we both got, like, jank cards.
Bum cards. The 3D works really nicely, though.
Yes.
If you're a little kid and this is your first 3D movie, you're going to have a blast. Because they do nothing but throw stuff at you nonstop.
Yeah.
The movie is a nonstop stuff getting thrown in your face experience.
Yeah, no, he's pretty, I mean, and Robert Rodriguez, let's not forget, was 3D when 3D wasn't cool.
True.
He did, you know, Spy Kids 3D in the old, like, lame-o red-blue
version. Oh, that was a terrible, terrible
3D. Yeah, but at least, you know, he was making the effort before 3D became a thing. I wish I had liked this movie more, because I like the first, I didn't see the third one, but I liked the first two Spy Kids, and I liked Shorts, which came out a couple
Shorts
years
ago. Shorts is fantastic. And that's the only reason why I didn't like this as much as I could have, because I kept thinking about Shorts.
Yes.
Shorts is so inventive and crazy and fast-paced and energetic and just nervy and has no agenda with adults.
No.
At all.
At all. Nothing. Exactly. It's just like, blah, 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 blah. You know, and it's fun. It's fun that way. And I wanted this movie to be more like that. And it's just...
It's this like, movie has a moral for parents. Just like Imagine That. Just like Old Dogs. Just like...
It's another one.
Popper's Penguins.
It's another movie that scolds working dads for not spending more time with their kids, you know, which frankly, in this economy, they should just be glad the dad is working at all, I think. But also, and it's like, if you want to slip that kind of message in, fine, but like literally the movie stops so that they can tell us this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, wow, booger joke, blah, 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 and, you know, kids and parents should spend more time together. I mean, it's, you know, that just really bugged me.
So it's a perfectly passable kid movie. Adults will enjoy Ricky Gervais as the talking robot dog.
Some critics singled him out for like extra hate.
Really?
Yeah. Well, British critics, I think.
Oh well, they hate him. That's why.
Because he's successful over here.
Because he's successful
over
here, so they hate him.
Yeah.
It's just okay. As a kid movie, it's just. Okay.
I thought it was a letdown, so I was disappointed.
I'll go back again to how it looks. You know, he knows what he wants things to look like,
mm-hmm.
and it's bright. And
yeah,
it's
super fakey green screen. Yeah. Like he has almost a sort of gleefully artificial aesthetic for these movies, where it's just like it's so completely fake. But for 3D, it's like, well, why not? As long as it's still bright with the glasses on, you know, what the heck.
He has a great sense of, you know, kid fun
mm-hmm.
that I just wish he had developed in the same way as Shorts.
Yeah, like Shorts really reminded me of like...
Flying alligators, telepathic babies, monsters made out of boogers.
Yeah.
And like, that's just three things in Shorts off the top of my head. that I remember everything else. There's like that crazy running gag of the staring contest.
Yes.
In shorts, which is hilariously funny. And
it's like when I watch shorts, I was reminded of like the live action Disney stuff that we grew up with. That kind of late 60s, early 70s.
Oh, it's better than that stuff.
Well, but
shorts is better than that
but
stuff.
But it has that
stuff is stupid. We just like it because we were children.
I'm still afraid to see North Avenue Irregulars again as an adult to see if it holds
up
or not.
You'll be happy and you'll be charmed by it because you were seven when you saw it the first time. But that doesn't mean it's
a good movie. But I think though that like Rodriguez is familiar with those films and kind of knows what makes them work, you know. And I mean, obviously, it makes improvements and makes them more contemporary.
There's
whatever.
So much fat on this pork shoulder, I can't wait.
But like you know that Rodriguez has Million Dollar Duck on DVD, is what I'm saying.
Somewhere. Yeah.
Also, the two big movies this week were both remakes of 80s movies. One of which. And they were both in 3D. One was Conan the Barbarian, and one was Fright Night. Fright Night was pretty good. And there were a lot of things about it that I liked.
I feel the same way.
I think their smartest move was hiring Marty Noxon, who was one of the main people behind Buffy the Vampire Slayer, to do the screenplay.
Right.
So it actually feels like the teen movie stuff in it it doesn't feel like it's just sort of tossed off. Like they actually bothered to kind of create some interesting character conflicts and things with the leads. Like, you know, the Anton Yelchin character, who's the, you know, Charlie Brewster, the lead kid, you know, used to be a big nerd. And so, like, you know,
right. Now he's escaped that social
and,
class.
Yeah, now he's dating this popular girl. And so, you know, when his nerdy friend Ed is trying to help him to, like, you know,
Christopher Mintz-Plasse,
trying to figure out who's you know, why kids are disappearing. You know, there's a whole sort of back and forth with that. And Imogen Poots as
the best name.
Yes.
That girl has the best name.
Whatever happened to Fenella Woolgar?
I don't know.
That was another name I loved. Anyway.
British TV, most likely.
Probably. But yeah, Imogen Poots, very charming as the girlfriend. And you know, Colin Farrell is appropriately sort of like seductive and dangerous as the vampire.
He's got those eyebrows.
Exactly. And then and this time around,
that's why they cast him.
In the original movie, Charlie gets helped out by this guy named Peter Vincent, who was an old horror movie star who was now the host of a local, you know, sort of Friday Night Frights show called Fright Night, and that was played by Roddy McDowall. In the new version, Peter Vincent is a Vegas magician and, like, you know,
Chris Angel,
self-styled kind of, like, I was getting to that. Sort of self,
I stole it from you.
Self-styled warrior of darkness, who is basically, yeah, Chris Angel via Russell Brand, who's played by David Tennant, who is one of the recent Doctor Who's. Oddly enough, this has the same. I thought this had the same kind of pacing problem that the original movie has, which I just saw for the first time on DVD a couple weeks ago. It's like there's.
Well, I want everything to be shorter.
But it's
amazing.
But it's not just about that. It's like, you know, like Ebert says, no good movie is too short and no bad movie is short enough.
Right.
It's not so much about length. It's just that the way that the actual pacing of the story goes, there's like everybody figures out that Charlie is not crazy and that the guy next door is indeed a vampire.
But then there's like five things they have to wrap up.
And then there's there's the big showdown with the vampire. But between those two things, it's like ka-dunk, 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 all these dominoes have to fall. And you're like, oh man, get on with it, you know. So that they didn't fix, but you know, for the most part, it's still, you know, pretty entertaining. And the director Craig Gillespie, who did Lars and the Real Girl, is shameless about the 3D, which frankly I am all for.
I wasn't into the 3D, and it might have been because I had crappy glasses.
I think I did. No, I had X-Band too. Actually,
did you have crappy glasses?
Yeah.
If you turned your head the wrong way, did it jiggle and become blurry?
Not that bad.
I must have had an actual pair of bum glasses.
Okay. Because, yeah. I hate those X-Band glasses, but even in that, it actually worked pretty well. But the 3D is really shameless in that he's throwing stuff at the camera all the time. It's like, here's a crucifix.
Not
and here's
all
some,
the time and not enough.
Pretty frequently. There's like viscera splattering the lens or like, you know, somebody explodes and all these sort of like sparks are dancing around or, you know, like somebody throws a brick through a glass window and it comes right at the camera. And so, you know, I mean, as dopey as 3D is, you might as well just treat it like a carnival gimmick and, like, milk it for all it's worth. So what the heck?
Yeah.
So it's okay. You know, it's
for a movie I didn't have any interest
exactly
in watching a remake of. Had a good time.
Yeah, it was okay.
It is acceptable.
Yeah,
it's a little better than acceptable.
It is perfectly adequate.
It's witty, and the people know what they're. All the cast is good. They know what they're doing. They know the difference between, you know, taking the subject matter seriously and taking themselves seriously.
Right. And it's kind of cool because it's set in this suburb of Vegas, and you know, Vegas obviously makes sense as a place for a vampire to be because of the nightlife and the transient population. But at the same time, I do love vampire movies that are set in the desert because, you know,
the Velvet Vampire.
Velvet Vampire, which is coming out on DVD in a month or two. You know, it's because we always think of like night and gloomy gothic shadows that are, when you have the bright, bright sun and there's a vampire movie going on, I think that's kind of a cool combo.
Yeah.
Conan the Barbarian. We didn't talk much about Conan. Like, I mean, I know what you think, but we didn't talk after I saw it. So,
I would like movies to just be about killing.
I know.
And when a movie is about killing, and then they try to impose some sort of quest or whatever on it. All right, here's the thing. The first Conan movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Mm-hmm.
There was not one smart bone in that movie's body. It was all just like, brr, bah, brr, kill,
right.
You know, freaky sex, kill a camel, and
people wearing skulls.
Yeah, he had that fur bikini. That was kind of hilarious. You know, it's cheesy and fun. This movie, Conan's dad, played by Ron Perlman, makes him a sword, and, you know, the kid's already proven that he can go out and decapitate everybody. He's like 14.
Yeah.
And he runs around just decapitating a whole tribe of marauding bad guys.
Without breaking the robin's egg that's in his mouth.
Yeah, he put that in his pocket. He brings their heads back, you know, and I will say there's some fun violence in this movie. I'm a big fan of sick violence. I want there to be a lot of it in a movie like this. And it was enough. But, you know, the kid comes back with all the heads, and the dad's like, now I'll make you a sword. Before you can wield it, you must first understand it. I'm like, shut up! Just give him the sword! Give him the sword.
Let him remove more heads.
Let him kill more people. He doesn't need to go on any sort of quest to understand the sword, you know. I just want him to not be so forced to be so self-regarding, you know. Like, why am I Conan? You know, I don't care why you're Conan, and you shouldn't either. You should just be murdering people.
Yeah, the unexamined life is worth living if you're Conan the Barbarian.
If you are Conan. And now I'm going to read you something that says it better than I could say it. This is from my friend Karen's husband, Todd.
Right.
And he is on Facebook. And on my Facebook
page, I know what this is, yeah.
He wrote this. This is exactly what he wrote. Every single TV and film take on Conan has gotten it wrong. He's never been about, quote, revenge for killing his family or, quote, going on the epic quest or any other do-gooder tripe. Robert E. Howard's Conan was all about, one, getting rich, two, getting laid, and three, getting drunk. If during the process of killing these snake-headed cultists while ripping off their forbidden temple, he also does some good things for the community, well then, all the better. But really, he was all about riding off into the sunset with a bag of gold and a saucy tart wearing NC-17 rags on the back of his horse.
Well, yeah, I mean,
that is true.
I've read a little bit of the Robert E. Howard Conan, and I'd say a case could be made that the movie Conan has much to do with the original pulp Conan as, like, movie James Bond has to do with the Ian Fleming James Bond, who's a really cold customer. You know? I liked the set pieces of this movie. I liked the sand zombies that do parkour.
The sand zombies were nice.
I liked the big octopus thing.
I liked that too.
You know, but for the most part, I found it really unengaging. It's directed by Marcus Nispel, who he did like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake and the Friday the 13th remake. And he's, you know, he's the remake guy and the not very good remake guy. And his, he keeps his streak alive, basically. The woman who's the lead, who's, what's her name again?
Rachel Nichols.
Rachel Nichols. I was watching her thinking, she seems so anachronistic in this movie. Like, yeah. She just doesn't feel like that sort of period, sword and sorcery kind of thing. And at first I thought, is it because she's too modern? And I was like, no, she's too 1970s. Like, I look at this.
No, she's too modern.
No, she is very nice. She gives off a real 1970s vibe.
Well, the look, her look, yeah.
But just her attitude, she seemed like if you had made this movie in 1973... You know,
she would have been the woman's liver character.
Yes, she felt. What I mean. She felt like Jennifer O'Neill she's or something.
About,
you know,
she's all about being sassy.
Yeah. And it was just,
I'm like, I'm sorry, this is Conan. He's going to chop off your head before and after. Well,
and, yeah. Anyway, but yeah, so she just felt like she walked out of a Protein 21 commercial. So right. I found that very distracting. And then you've got Rose McGowan as
who's great.
Who is. Camping it up madly as the eyebrow deficient sorceress daughter of the bad guy who has incestuous designs on daddy. And my favorite part is when they're like, you know, storming the temple of the Vestal Virgins or whatever, and she lifts her sword up in the air and goes, I was like, it reminds me of in the South Park movie when they're making the sound of a dying giraffe or whatever. Like, yes. What are you doing, Rose McGowan?
Whatever she wants.
I guess, yeah. Well, yeah. She and Rodriguez were talking about making a Red Sonja remake, so I guess this was as close as she's going to get. But right. Yeah, it's pretty stupid. We both saw it in 2D because it was like, screw it, we're buying our own tickets. I'm not seeing
this
in
3D. They showed it to the press, but not...
Not enough times.
It was a terrible,
yeah,
a terribly handled publicity situation.
Yes, they were clearly not dying to have us see it. If we missed it, tough.
It was enough killing, enough blood, enough, you know, dun dun dun, dun for me,
right. Yeah, I didn't actively hate it.
I want Conan to be a man. Like the worst kind of man.
Oh, yeah. Can we talk about how terrible Jason Momoa is in this movie as Conan?
Well, here's the thing. He's whatever as Conan, but I kept thinking about him as Khal Drogo and, on Game of Thrones. And as Khal Drogo, he is a brute. And he is like a half a brute.
Well, I've never watched Game of Thrones, but I was just like, wow, this guy is... not got it. Like, whatever it is that he's supposed to be communicating or, you know, kind of just... Some people have that presence in front of the camera. I mean, even Schwarzenegger in 1982, who could still barely speak English, was a presence, you know? And this guy is just, meh. You know, he was a little... I was reminded of Fabio more than once, let me put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not a bad...
Comparison,
yeah.
Is that it this week? Is that all that opened?
DVD releases.
Well, I know, but I mean, as far as that's new, all the new stuff, yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. What a cruddy week. It's late summer. And soon it will be early fall, and neither of those things are
the same thing. Yeah.
Because the end of August
is... I'm kind of stoked about Contagion.
Me too. The end of August is where they burn off all the summer movies that just weren't going to cut it against the big stuff. In fact, none of those movies open at number one this weekend. It looks like that's going to be The Help. And then early September is when it's all the movies that were designed to be Oscar bait but aren't good enough to actually be Oscar bait. Those get burned off as well. So the next month or so is going to be really lame.
Yes. Except for Contagion. Shark Knight.
Shark Knight's PG-13.
Oh, really?
Yes. That's going to be... Yeah.
All right. Forget I said anything.
Yeah. But no, there's some good indie stuff coming up, and we'll talk about that as we get there. DVD picks this week. What do you got?
Fat Girl.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
explain why.
Well, it's been on my mind.
Mm-hmm. Because we got some messages from the folks at Secretly Timid, and they were... asking about our opinion of Fat Girl. I've never actually seen it. The only Katherine Breillat film I've seen is it Romance?
Did you see Romance?
I saw Romance. I liked it. I haven't seen
Romance. It. Is great.
I haven't seen it. I haven't seen any other ones.
Romance is hilarious. Romance is like
maybe not the word I'd pick, but
sets fire to everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fat Girl is a French movie from 2001, 2002, something like that. In French, I think the title is "À ma sœur," which is something like
"to my sister."
Oh, my sister! You know, it's all like angrily or whatever. Oh. In America, in the English title is "Fat Girl."
Right.
It's about two sisters. One's like 15. One of them's like 15, and she's real pretty, and you know, boys want to do her, even though she's jailbait. 12-year-old sister is
the titular fat girl.
Is the titular fat girl? Yeah. She's fat, and she is angry about everything. She hates everyone. And it's kind of the story of these two young girls and their sort of rivalry as sisters, but their connection as sisters, their sexuality as it sort of blossoms and develops. Mm. And blossom is really the wrong word, actually. I shouldn't even use that word because it just sort of erupts. It's not a blossom at all.
It pops like a pustule.
There is a tension and anger in this film that you feel from start to finish, and you know something bad is going to happen. You just don't know what. And I'm not going to give away anything. Just wait for that ending, because you will be debating with yourself whether or not what you even saw was real at the end, because for a variety of reasons, not that it really happened or didn't happen, but whether or not it was imagined or real among the characters themselves.
Gotcha.
And it is in a world where movies about teenage girls are few and far between.
Yeah,
and most of them end up being something like Monte Carlo, where getting the guy from Glee to be your boyfriend
is goal.
Kind of like the goal.
Yeah, I was going to say, just the idea.
Catherine Breillat has no time for this sort of thing.
Yeah, a movie about young girl sexuality is mostly taboo in this country, with the exception of like 13.
And even then, it's like she's presented as a problem that needs to be controlled.
Right.
In this movie, these girls, they take care of themselves.
Mm.
The fat girl, in particular, takes care of herself. It's a brilliant, bleak, uncompromising film. I really love it.
Is Breillat's like Sleeping Beauty? Is that the new?
Sleeping Beauty.
Is that opening soon?
I think it already opened and left Los Angeles.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh man. Okay.
Yeah. Well, we missed it. I was like in Dallas.
Shoot. Anyway, yes. Catherine Breillat's Fat Girl is available from the Criterion Collection, and also available from the Criterion Collection is my DVD pick this week, which is Roman Polanski's Cul-de-Sac, which was unavailable in this country for a long time on video, and has now just been released in a very handsome Blu-ray edition. We were talking.
You're a very handsome Blu-ray edition.
You, thank you. a couple of weeks ago, we opened the show with a song from the musical The Young Girls of Rochefort, and we talked about Françoise d'Orléac, who was Catherine Deneuve's sister, who passed away very young, at the age of 25, in a car accident. Which you know, brought her very promising film career to a close. But one of the reasons why, you know, she is still remembered so fondly by film lovers is her work in Cul-de-Sac, which is
and Young Girls.
Yeah. But Cul-de-Sac is a very dark, you know, it's Roman Polanski. It's a dark comedy about an unhappy couple who's played by d'Orléac and Donald Pleasance,
yes.
Whose home is invaded by American gangster Lionel Stander, who, if you ever watched Heart to Heart, you will know as Max from that show. and, you know, it's basically the
living with you is a nonstop
treat.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
look, that's what most people know Lionel Stander for.
I know. It's just that you had that in your head and you pulled that out. And, yeah.
Anyway,
I'm not mocking you.
Okay,
I'm happy.
You're admiring me.
I'm admiring you right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's a Polanski movie. So basically, all
are you admiring my skillful chopping of this pork?
It has been riveting to watch. I have to say, over the course of this episode. It being a Polanski movie, they all start playing mind games on each other, and it's funny, but it's again like you were saying about Fat Girl, bleak and dark, and it really
all the best movies.
Like exactly, and yeah. and probably a lot of people haven't seen it unless you're like a super hardcore Roman Polanski fan. It's probably one that has gone under your radar. So now that it is out from Criterion, check it out. New thing, I always mention, you know, you can like us on Facebook, the Linoleum Knife podcast page. You can, don't touch me with your pork hands, trichinosis. You know, you can drop us an email at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Now, if you are on getglue.com, which
I don't
is,
even know what GetGlue is.
Okay. It's like, all right, you know how there's Yelp and there's Foursquare, where if you go to a certain restaurant or you're in a store, you can check in and like, you know...
I don't know what that is either.
You know how I'm the Duke of everything of things on Yelp.
Oh, God.
Like I'm the Duke of Irv's Burgers.
It
and
is.
Stuff.
It's. I. You know what? You I just said living with you is a treat because of the whole you know all about everything kind of thing. This is one of those moments where living with you is an irritation, like
it only
shoe.
Bugs you because you took me to some art galleries and I checked in there on Yelp and I became the Duke because nobody had checked in there before.
Right. A pretty nice art gallery here in the city where I am known as a customer, where the assistant, where the gallery, not the assistant, where the gallery like manager comes up to me and is like, oh, Dave, you know, like, because I buy art from this place. And he comes in, pulls out his stupid little phone and like goes, bling, and he suddenly becomes the Duke of this gallery. I'm going to punch you in the face.
Look, stop
resenting. Guess what I'm the Duke of? This place.
Stop resenting the aristocracy. God has put me in this position. Anyway, so Get Glue, rather than checking in into physical locations, you check into media. So you check, like when you're watching a movie or you're reading a book or you're listening to a band or you're playing a video game, you can check into it on Get Glue. Listeners of Linoleum Knife can now check in on Get Glue that you are listening to this show. I figured out how to do it. For some reason, they've got us listed with TV shows. So you have to click on
we're like a TV show that you can't see.
Yes, exactly.
We're like a great talk show.
We're like Derek Jarman's
You imagine
Blue.
Us.
So if you're on Get Glue and you want to check in, go to watching a show, put in Linoleum Knife, and you can check in that you are listening to this show. So please do. And yeah, so that's it for this week. We want to, of course, send you over to all of our good friends in the podcast world, the Popcorn Mafia, the Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Blowhard, the Podcast, the Criterion Cast, Fat Guys at the Movies, Secretly Timid, who we mentioned, and of course, Glitter in the Garbage with the very funny Drew Droege. And yeah, drop us a line, linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Leave us a nice review at YouTube, at iTunes. That would be lovely. And anything else? Mr. Pork?
Cash. Cash in the mail.
All right, we're going to go enjoy.
Cash in the mail.
We're going to enjoy Carnitas. We have some exciting news about things coming up in the next few months, but it's too early. So when we get closer, we'll actually tell you about it. Anyway,
secrets.
We thank you for listening, and we will catch you next time.
Bye.